Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Prepare Radio with your host, Diane Thomas.
Good morning and welcome to Prepare Radio. This is Diane Thomas, your host. We are been talking about tithing, giving, and the scriptures. What do the scriptures really say? If we're going to use them as an authority for why we tithe, we want to make sure we're really following what the scriptures say. And what we've done is we've gone through the scriptures to see what they actually say, not what we've been taught, not what we believe, or not what we think or feel, but what they really say. And we're ready to now move forward in how to apply the principles, the distinction of the principles between tithing and giving into our life now. Because this has been such a long series, we've been going through just a recap of the summary of each of the sections, time-wise, chronologically. Throughout history, God deals with us and with his people with the historical record of his revealing of himself differently according to different dispensations of time or eons, different ages. So we the way he relates to us now is different than the way he's related to us in the past. And we can track the whole concept of tithing and giving in that same way that we want to know how he is dealing with us now. What is our relationship with him now? So we've been quickly reviewing the different eons, the different time periods, and God's perspective on tithing and giving in each one of those. So we have come up to the eon where after God gave the law, he added to it, after the books of Moses, as the culture changed, the needs of the people changed, the law changed with it, and additions were made. And as part of that additions, the concept of tithing also changed, and even giving. So just to quickly recap, we talked about that whether in the books of Moses and every subsequent reference of tithing is always tied to the totality of the law. Nowhere is tithing or any other aspect of the law separated from the law as a whole. So tithing is always mentioned as a part of the whole. It is still a requirement to fulfill the law of Moses. So, in other words, if you're going to try to fulfill the law, you have to tithe, but you also have to make animal sacrifices, not work on the Sabbath. You have to fulfill all the law, period. There's no parts that are not included in that. It's all or nothing. And we use the example of if you gave your child to earn his weekly, you know, or monthly, whatever, his allowance, you gave him a list of 10 things he needed to do in order to give it, in order to receive his allowance, you would maybe, you know, so he understood it, so you understood it, these are the list of the 10 things you need to do, and if you do these 10 things, then I will give you an allowance of $1 a week, $5 a week, whatever it is. And if he came back to you and said, I want my $5 now, and you said you did everything on this list, and he said, no, I only did the last thing. because the last thing is where you then say that you'll give me the allowance. And you'd have to explain to him, no, you have to do all 10, and then you'll get your allowance. It's not just the last thing. Well, that's what people have done with the chapter, the book of Malachi, and especially the last chapter. They've been this thing since the last verse talks about bringing all your goods into the storehouse, all the tithes into the storehouse, then and see if I will not open for you the windows of heaven. People, unfortunately and mistakenly, break that out as a separate thing, and it's not. It's not a separate thing. You have to do the other 9 items on the list, and then you will receive the blessings of the Lord. And some point in time, we'll go into the difference between the blessings of God and the inheritance of God. I don't know about you, but as a son of God, I want the inheritance. And I will give the blessings. So we'll go into that some other time. But again, for the law of Moses, you either have to do all of it, or it doesn't count. You don't get partial credit. It's all or nothing. The second conclusion we can draw is that there is always an emphasis on caring for those that are involved in ministry, those that are poor, and those that are widows, and the foreigner, the stranger. Now, it doesn't say that to take care of those who are lazy, who don't work, who have an excuse not to work. It's taking care of those who cannot take care of themselves, not for those who do not or will not or choose not to take care of themselves. So there's that distinction quite clearly by defining who gets extra care. Those who cannot take care of themselves. Not those who will not take care of themselves. But that's a constant throughout scriptures. It's not distinct within the law. It's always been a running thread throughout the scriptures. And then finally, what we see in this concluding of the law, God starts the whole basis of finishing the law, concluding the impact, the purpose of the law. So chronologically, as the time draws near to the coming of the Messiah, the scriptures reflect God's coming to an end with letting the law define his relationship with his people. He starts planting seeds. As long as the law is in effect, God can only have a surface relationship with his creation. He refers again and again to giving his people a new heart. With his commandments, with his statutes, his law written on their hearts. So it's not doing rightly as an act or because they have to, but because it is now in their heart, in their nature, to do what is right, what he desires, what lines up with his nature. It becomes natural to us because he changes our nature. And God starts to really emphasize the change of heart that is necessary because the law cannot and does not and never intended to change the heart. It was to prove that the heart needed to be changed and to reveal that even if you fulfilled every aspect of the law, it would not change your heart. It would not change your nature. So the law fulfills his purpose, but we want to be clear about what that purpose is. Just as so many people rely so heavily on the perfection of the scriptures, the inerrancy and infallibility of the scriptures, by saying, well, don't you think that if God, you know, that God could keep the scriptures pure and that we can rely on them, that God can't keep, protect them? And my answer is always, absolutely. If God wanted the scriptures to be perfect, he could have absolutely made them perfect. But we go back to the premise. Did God ever say, I want you to rely on a book? Did God ever say, when Jesus was here and he ascended, did he ever say, I'm going to ascend and I'm going to be with my Father, but I will send a book? And if you study that book and follow that book, then you will be my sons or receive the blessings or whatever. Did he ever say that? No, he never did. And I always wonder if he really wanted us to follow a book, if the whole purpose of his dying and resurrecting, rising again, was to follow a book, why didn't he write it? Why didn't he write the book? But moving on, the above, what we've just talked about as far as the additions to the law of Moses, it's a good place to start in judging, and that's your job, what is being taught in your church, in your own beliefs, in what is being taught as the tithe. You are to be discerning. It's your responsibility. Your spiritual condition, your soulical health is not the responsibility of your elders or your teachers or your pastor or anyone else but you. Your spiritual condition, your soulical condition, and your natural condition, your health, is your responsibility. In that capacity, part of that, taking that responsibility, is evaluating, judging what you're being taught. Is what you're being taught bringing you into a greater dependence on God, a greater need to hear him clearly for yourself? Is it practical? Does it give you something to do? Is it drawing you into a greater rest, a greater excitement for your life? Hear so many Christians about all they want is to get out of here and go to heaven, because then they'll be with God, then they'll be with Christ, then they'll have all their questions answered. Really, all that says is that God isn't enough for them here. There's a lack here. And I think in so many ways we create our own idea of life after death because we are dissatisfied here. And rather than dealing with our dissatisfaction, our lack, our need here, and taking the responsibility for it, we delay that responsibility and put it off on someone else, even God himself, that when we die, then we'll be happy. Then it will be worth it. And we'll look back and we'll see why this was important and why that was important. And if we really looked at a lot of our beliefs about what's going to happen when we die, There's no scriptural basis for it. But what about this? But what about that? Doesn't matter. If what you're basing your information on, your hope, is the scriptures, you better make sure it's in there. Or have we just built a belief on our own needs being fulfilled now? There's only one way to find out. Try asking God. The difference, the distinction between Christianity and all other religions is not a book, not a doctrine, or a belief, or a heaven and a hell, or a code of behavior. It's relationship with God. Only Christianity has a living God that speaks to every individual. You and I as Christians don't rely on a priest or praying to someone else to intervene on our behalf or wait to achieve some level of spirituality or oneness or communion with nature or time or our dead fathers to be able to then hear from God or experience Him. You and I experience Him from the moment we are reborn. The more we grasp that distinction and embrace it and learn to live that way, the greater our freedom from those distorted perceptions and expectations. As Christians, what turns the world upside down is not our beliefs, our doctrine, our books, our concepts. It's the life of God that is in us and available to be given to this world. He turns this world upside down. Christ in us, flowing to us and through us. And if you aren't experiencing that life first, how can you possibly share it? When we get out of balance, well, God is doing this in my life, so then I'll be able to minister to others. Well, so often we just get through a crisis by the skin of our teeth rather than coming through it with victory and rest and freedom. You are a son of God. Don't settle for just making it through. Understanding and that strength and that confidence comes from experiencing God on a moment-by-moment basis, on a day-by-day, situation-by-situation basis, decision-by-decision. That's when all things line up. And beliefs that you were once holding so dear and as the bedrock of your doctrine, they just fall away. Because the light of life shows the inadequacy of the doctrines we hold. All of us. We're all in that process. So, moving from the concluding of the law, God emphasized the need for the change of heart. And if we don't recognize that everything changed, we try to bring in bits and pieces of what God has said, it is finished. And we want to have some semblance of control. As false as it is, as inadequate as it is. And so we don't let go of everything. We hold on to those things. And in the Christian church especially, certain things have been agreed upon that we're not going to let go. When you look at them, when you really scrutinize them, they don't bear up under light, under life. So we don't scrutinize them. But if we want that freedom, and God's not going to let you settle for anything less, whether it's in this life or the next, you're going to have to go through that purging, that proving to you that it's not about your will or your mind or your emotions, your heart. It's about your spirit, the life from your spirit, not your behavior, not your doctrine. And as long as you cling to those things that are hindrances to that spirit, he will continue working on those areas. Because he wants you whole and complete and entire. Without any shadow of turning, without any doubt or area that is hindering his life flowing to you and through you. He will not share his glory with another. With another doctrine, with another belief, with another law, with another concept. His desire is for you to be one, spirit, soul, and body, and all of you in him. Anything less than that is his enemy. You aren't his enemy, but the concepts that you're holding on to are. Because they're keeping you from being able to receive what he wants to give you. We're all in that process. But as we see where in the past, when we really start scrutinizing what we believe, we see that the additions and clarifications that were made over time and according to culture and society. Hopefully, y'all know that in different cultures, in different countries, they use a different Bible. I mean, it's even just translating into a different language, and then there's different versions of the Bible. An altar call. Most countries don't do that. Baptism, you know, communion, these little rituals that we all have. Going from country to country, things are done totally different. And so what we want to do is start looking at, are any of them are appropriate? Not in the sense of we need to tear them down, but we don't want them to be a distraction. If God puts his finger on something, we want to say, okay, Lord, what is your truth here? And move forward. Be willing to be corrected and move forward. Not a big deal. God doesn't hold it against you that you're believing what you're believing now. But there's a problem if you start arguing with him. No, God, that doesn't line up with your scriptures. I can't believe that. Okay, we really need to be looking at who is God. So we see that God's intent for instituting the law in general and the tithe in particular was to fulfill the needs of a growing community, the Israelites. That basically the tithe was to function to support the government. It was like taxes, and to take care of those who could not take care of themselves. It was not about a spiritual relationship, and it didn't change the heart. So when we think about it, we can't use it as a reason today, as a standard for a doctrine, a foundation for a doctrine today. So then we looked at the transition between the law, the time of the law, and grace, the New Testament, but still the pre-resurrection of Christ before he was risen, which was still under the law. Remember, Jesus came to fulfill the law. It wasn't his birth that changed everything, and it wasn't even his death, though it changed, that changed a lot. What changed everything was his resurrection. And what we concluded was that Jesus never told anyone to tithe. In fact, every reference to tithing during that transition time was in the negative sense. He only directed the rebukes to the Pharisees or to those who considered themselves the elite, the religious, the productive, the God-pleasers of their day. And I even wonder, looking for who did Jesus use the written scriptures to correct? Who did he quote scriptures to? He quoted them to the devil and to the religious leaders of the day. To those who he was ministering to, he framed his content in illustrations that they could understand. The audience was more important than the authority. That's, remember the illustration where the guards had been sent out to arrest Jesus, and they came back and said, "No man has ever talked like this," because he didn't use the authority of the scriptures. He used his own authority. And when you know God, that's the authority you have. It's like if you've had an experience and somebody says, "No, you haven't," how can you argue with them? They're simply denying reality. And this is where we're going to have to settle it for ourselves, that God is, in our relationship with him, is all about reality. And we get this whole idea about that faith is a substitute. Well, you just have to believe. If your beliefs aren't resulting in real experiences on a moment-by-moment basis, that's where you need to be focusing your attention and asking God, why not? How many times a day are you breathing? Odds are, on a pretty regular basis. Well, that likewise is the amount of experience, his spirit being poured into you through your spirit and experiencing his life on a moment-by-moment basis. But it's real difficult to tell someone that. But if necessary, God will give you the words. Otherwise, he just shows the experience for what it is. So we'll pick it up there next Saturday. But I really encourage you this week, Lord, where am I needing to focus to let your life reveal your life in me and through me? Is there an area where you want to draw my attention? and let him do that. We often need to be reminded that he wants to talk to us about things, and we get into our ruts and our schedules. And Lord, we just ask that you interrupt us in any area. We give you permission to interrupt us at any given time to draw our attention to something you want to talk to us about. So we'll be getting back together again, 9 o'clock, next Saturday. Until then, have a great week. And remember, you can always get in touch with me at diane@wecanprepare.org. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great weekend.